Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the NBA Front Office Show. Trevor Lane here. You can find me on Twitter at Trevor_Lane, over on Instagram at TrevorLaneNBA, joined as always by Keith Smith at KeithSmithNBA. Before we get into anything today, because I know I'm going to forget if I don't do it right now, tonight we are going to be hosting over on Playback, Mavs Warriors Game 4. Do the Mavs go home? Is it a sweep? Or do they survive to see another day? Come join us. Use the link in the description below. Keith and I are going to be on there. We're going to be providing our stream of the game so you can watch it directly with us and talk basketball with us. We get to hang out, chat basketball during the game. We'll talk about what's happening in the game. We'll take questions and comments on all kinds of other things as well, MCU related and otherwise, and of course NBA related. But we'll be talking all throughout the game. Going to be a lot of fun. So come join us again, 9 o'clock Eastern time start for this one. So come join us on Playback. Use the link in the description below. Keith, I had to do it because every day, you know, behind the scenes, whenever we try to plan one of these things, I forget to say it. So I had to make sure that I threw it in here at the beginning. But how are you doing, man? And are you feeling good now that your Celtics have tied it up 2-2?
Yeah, it was. I'll take full ownership for no show yesterday. Yeah, things were a disaster around the Smith house. We had a dog that was sick and was unfortunately he was coming out of all ends, all over the house, which was never fun. While we also had major plumbing issues for the second time in a week. So not great, but we got through that and everything now seems to be, let me knock on wood very heavily here, seems to be good. So we're these playoffs have been something else. Mm-hmm. We're now up to, it's up to like 22 blowouts of 20 or more points in the playoffs. That's more, I believe anyone has said, than like in any kind of recent history, at least, which is tough. And this Heat Celtics series in a way feels, clearly I'm a little bit biased, but when Boston doesn't throw the ball away over and over and over again, they're the better team. The Heat need those, 15 to 20 turnovers to get their offense going because they just can't score in the half court against the Celtics. Even in the games they've won, they struggled in half court offense. So, I feel confident as much as you can. Mm-hmm. 2-2 with two games left on the road and potential seven game series. But, we'll see. We'll see what comes in game five here on Wednesday night.
I was shocked that the degree to which the Heat just didn't show up in game four. It reminded me a lot of the Suns in game seven last round. Just a complete, we don't feel like playing basketball tonight, so we're not going to. That was the general sense I got. And perhaps that was, just that early first quarter onslaught was enough to where the Heat went, we're all banged up. We already got the split on the road. That's what we needed to do. We've got home court. Let's worry about next game. But still, for the NBA, what a bust of a conference finals on both sides because we've seen so many blowouts after what's been a really fun playoffs. Can we go back to the second round, please? Those were some fun, some fun series. Not to say that these series haven't had their own intrigue, but just from a general NBA perspective, having so many blowouts is frustrating for fans because you're shutting the game off at halftime in some of these situations because you already know what the outcome is. So here's to hoping that changes. I do think part of this people were pointing, I saw this conversation going on social media last night saying, well, it's the three-point shooting. Because so many teams are shooting the threes now and just nonstop three-pointers, what happens is if you're a little bit off one night and the other team's a little bit on, that creates a blowout because three-pointers are worth so much in today's NBA and just in basketball in general. And I think there's some degree of truth to that. I also think there's some randomness to this. Yes, it's the matchups, but also this just kind of was what is going to naturally happen. Just the odds say at some point you're going to hit a stretch where there's a bunch of blowouts, just like at some point you're going to hit a stretch where you have a ton of insanely close games. And I'm hopeful that we're going to see some, here's my favorite catchphrase, regression to the mean coming in terms of blowouts, and they're going to wind up with some close ones, hopefully in the NBA Finals, of course, and hopefully for the rest of the way here.
Yeah, I think the three-point shooting is, in general, it is the great equalizer, right? It can make a team that is down, can allow them to come back in a game or a series. It can allow you to, if you're up, to keep a team down. If you're a lesser quality team, you can get into a game if you shoot really well. Last night, definitely the outlier there because Boston was only 8 out of 34 on threes. But Miami just, they couldn't get anything going. And it looks better them going 14 of 36, but they took a ton of three-pointers in the third and fourth quarter when, quite frankly, this game was over at halftime. Yeah. It never was really close. Miami made a little run in the third quarter, but that little run got them to within like 22. So it wasn't even really there. The 20-point margin, that's even, I think, kind of deceiving if a 20-point margin can be that, because I think Boston, they were up by so many, and then late just kind of went into full-on cruise control. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I'm with you. I'm hopeful that we'll get into far more competitive games as these as we go a little bit deeper. But I think the other thing that I wanted to reference there too is I think coaches now more than any other, especially with all these injuries and in the, especially in the Boston Miami series, I think they're kind of looking at it and saying, no, we'll lose the battle to win the war. It's not worth it. Pull guys out. I think that's exactly what Eric Spoelstra did last night. His guys, nobody logged more than 27 minutes minus Victor Oladipo, who played 30. But that was, in part because Tyler Hero was out and in part because he played a lot in garbage time. But yeah, I mean, he waved the white flag very early on and said, that's it. We're not even going to get into this game. Let's just get these guys out of here and we'll live to play another day.
I thought it was a bit strange, like as the game was going on, and you probably felt this a lot more than I did watching it from the Boston perspective. I was thinking, why do the Celtics still have, why is Jason Tatum on the floor? What's going on? Like, I mean, that to me, I was nervous for the Celtics. I'm like, oh my gosh, like if another injury happens right now, if Jason Tatum turns his ankle or something like that, people are going to lose their minds in Boston because these guys shouldn't still be on the floor right now.
Well, and at the end of the game, Derek White looked like he was grabbing at his hamstring. Mm-hmm. It was actually, he was rubbing both sides of his thigh and, or I guess his hamstring and quad. But what it was he was cramping. So he was actually fine. It was just, he was having some cramps. But yeah, it definitely ran through my head. I was hammering it on Twitter. What happened, I think, with Ime Udoka is they had a handful of games early in the year where he pulled the starters out with 5-6 minutes to go. Mm-hmm. And the deep bench at that time just completely fell apart to the point where coaches hate nothing more than having to put starters back in a game that was essentially already won. And he had to do that at like three times in the first half of the season. I think now it's a little different. I wish he'd trust him a little bit more. When you're up between 20, 25, 30 points for most of the fourth quarter, I would have at that point said, all right, hey, if we blow this one, we deserve to lose the game and the series and everything else. But I'm with you. Yeah, I would rather see that. So, but in the end, everybody made it out, okay, as far as we know. We'll see about Marcus Smart for game five. We'll see about Tyler Hero on the Heat side. Miami's got a whole bunch of guys banged up. Robert Williams is very much, they continue to say he's very day-to-day. And they won't know day-to-day depending on how his knee responds after games. So, yeah. One other thing I'll touch on, too, and I'm like the last person to say this. We got to add more days to the conference finals. Like, even if it's just on when we travel, it's 2 days off. Mm-hmm. it's too much. Like playing every other day like this, it's too much on these guys. You can see, I mean, that's part of why these games stink too, is these guys are exhausted and they're banged up. And then you're seeing teams just say, forget it and pull the plug.
Yeah. I mean, playoff basketball is played at a higher intensity than regular season basketball. And so that's something that should be accounted for, particularly if you want good games, if you want a good product. You've got to figure out a way to not be playing quite as frequently, because these guys need rest. They do. If they're going to perform at this level, if they're going to be asked to play 40 plus minutes a night with high intensity of every possession matters, that is very, very difficult to do when you're playing as often they are as they are. Plus, when you throw in the travel in the series as well, not an easy thing to do. Yep. Let's get into our first big news topic. Obviously, we didn't have a show yesterday, but let's get into our first big news topic of the weekend, really, which was Tim Connelly moving from the Denver Nuggets to the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I believe we touched upon this rumor that it might happen on Friday of last week, but now it is done, going to the Wolves. Let's start with the Wolves side of things. How big of a deal is this for them? Is this just a clear sign that new ownership group is willing to spend and do what it takes? And I mean, should Minnesota fans be celebrating right now?
I think there's two parts to this. One is, I think it is a very good move for them. Basketball-wise, I think Tim Connelly has proven he can do a really good job in a smaller market to identify talent, keep talent, get guys linked up and there and everything. So I think that is really, really important. He's also proven he can build a pretty good roster around an extremely talented big man, which is not the easiest thing to do in the NBA. Let's, I mean, face it, Philly has had challenges with that over the last several years. So I think, I think he has a pretty good understanding of, the way to build out a roster that way. I would also be extremely excited if I was Wolves fans, because this means now, yes, Glenn Taylor still is involved. He's still the primary or majority owner, whatever we want to call it. Until 2023, but Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez have come in there and basically said, I'm going to channel my inner John Hammond, the Jurassic Park John Hammond, not the Orlando Magic version.
I'm glad you specified.
Spare no expense, right? Because that's what they're doing. I mean, they're paying Tim Connelly an average of $8 million a year, which is, that's a good chunk of change. Mm-hmm. And guaranteed, they're also, I mean, there's ownership stake in that as well. But there's also things that are coming in for Connelly, I bet, with, we have to do this to the front office, whether it be size of staff or reach of staff or whatever it is there. So, yeah, all around, if I was the Wolves fans, I'd be extremely excited about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is great for the Wolves. And they just had... obviously their playoff exit was not what they were hoping for, but they just had a season that was pretty positive. I mean, they were better than most people expected them to be. There's plenty of question marks still around the team, but overall, I think Minnesota fans should be feeling pretty good heading into the offseason, should be excited about next season. And now this just continues that rolling. I mean, this is just a more momentum for them. And I think there's some changes that they'll make this summer. And you're going to have a Minnesota team that's going to be right in the thick of things in the West again next season. So exciting stuff there. For Denver, how big of a loss is this? And is this a bad sign for a Nuggets team that's shown a willingness to spend to keep players? They just spent a ton of money on Michael Porter Jr. and all these pieces that they're keeping along, Aaron Gordon, and yet now they just let Tim Connelly go.
Yeah, so again, let's split it into two different parts. The basketball side of it, major loss. Uh-huh. No other way to put it. It's not great to lose a key executive who is huge. You lost him to a division rival as well, which is also tough. It's a Wolves team that is, I guess it's fair to still call them up and coming. Not super duper young, but they're
younger,
moving up. Yeah. So I think that is, that's another thing that's difficult. It's a team that, let's see what they do with D'Angelo Russell, but you get through this year and then, incredible flexibility moving forward with that roster with Karl-Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards. There's kind of your two main building blocks. So I think that part's tough. And then the message this sends is we don't want to spend money to keep, a top, tier executive around, and that's not a great message to send. Now there was a lot of hand wringing when Masai Ujiri left Denver. of, you know, what are they going to do? How are they going to figure this out? Tim Connelly plugged in and did quite well. Calvin Booth, who, if you're a longtime NBA fan, you probably remember, was a player in the league for a number of years. I think for a very long time, he was probably most known for being the only Penn State basketball player in the NBA. I may have that wrong, but I think that was one of the things he was known for. But he's been there through a lot of this. In Denver. So I think that's really important to note. So I think they'll be okay. It's just not a great message to send of, you know, yeah, we don't know, because there's all these questions. There already is, you know, are they willing to go into the luxury tax? How deep into the luxury tax? What is that going to look like? So we'll see. And we should note, just so we are clear on this, the Tim Connelly thing is done. It is official. Mm-hmm. It is complete. The Wolves announced that hire yesterday. So it's no longer speculation or even just this is going to happen. It is done and complete.
Calvin Booth, indeed, out of Penn State. I do wonder how big of a deal the ownership stake was. Because you look at the valuation of NBA franchises, sure, it just keeps going up. You've got a new TV deal that's coming up in the near future.
Yeah,
I mean, I could understand, like, with Minnesota being willing, like, I do wonder if that was the point in the negotiation where Tim Connelly just, okay, well, I can't turn this down, right? To have some percentage of ownership in an actual franchise. And I could understand if Denver wouldn't be okay with matching that, because that could wind up being extremely valuable as NBA franchises just continue to go up in terms of their value. That's really interesting. And again, the specifics of exactly what that looks like, how much ownership, all that, I don't know that off the top of my head or have that information out. But I think that could wound up being a big factor for the Nuggets.
Yep. Yeah, and it very, very may very well have been. And the Nuggets are, you know, it's under the Kroenke Sports and Entertainment or something along those lines group. Like, yeah, they're we're highly unlikely to give up any spots or any ownership equity or anything like that. So, you know, it is what it is.
All right, Zach LaVine.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So, I mean, more available than we thought. Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report throwing that out there, that Zach LaVine, he's not a lock to return to the Bulls, but as we've been saying for a while now, we've been saying, look, most likely he winds up back with the Bulls. It just, if you look at the market, you look at his value, you look at all the particulars, the thing that makes most sense is for him to go back to the Chicago Bulls. But there are other options. And I think this is really key for the negotiation with the Bulls, because if the Bulls mess around at all, they try to make, you know, put in a team option or anything like that, or non-guaranteed or money or whatever, there's other landing spots for Zach LaVine to go to. But I still think ultimately he winds up back in Chicago. I know there's other, you know, Portland and San Antonio. There's other places that he could potentially go. But I think it's still going to be something worth monitoring. I think that's where we're at. It's something worth monitoring. When we thought heading into this postseason, it was just going to be a lock and something we didn't need to pay that much attention to.
Yeah. Personally, I want it to actually be in play just because it makes things a lot more fun.
Sure.
You know, and makes things a lot more fun for us to cover and all those kind of things. I though do believe, you know, in the end, the money will be enough of a difference. You know, maybe that fifth year as well. If I was LaVine, I think that fifth year is pretty important, just considering the health concerns he has had in his career. So, yeah. So I think there is a chance that could matter. But yeah, I mean, I do think this is no longer the, Yep, lock it in. Zach LaVine off the board. We're going to talk another guy in a minute here. Take him off the board too. And, you know, let's, you know, kind of do the summer of trades and role players moving around. Well, you know, maybe one of the real stars is actually available. I had someone ask too. We will do our free agent ranking shows and previews by the positions and all that stuff. That's all coming, guys. We got, you know, I know it seems crazy, but we've got, you know, still a month-ish to go to get into that stuff. But we've got all that stuff queued up and ready to go. But just so somebody asked, because they it was funny the way they put it. Was, I don't know that I liked all your tiers, but I really liked the shows, which in the end, that's important. Mm-hmm. Disagree all you want, you know, so we'll take it.
Absolutely. And yeah, that stuff is coming. I mean, it's going to be, we've got, obviously there's a lot of stuff going on with the playoffs and everything like that, but we've got plenty of time to get into that and talk about those things. So that is coming. Let's jump over to DeAndre Ayton though. DeAndre Ayton.
Oh, so that's another one. Cause I wasn't even thinking DeAndre Ayton as the guy we were going to talk later.
Okay.
Maybe resign him.
I'm looking at my show notes. I know who else you're thinking
now
of.
You know who.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's a tease right there.
Yeah,
now you
right?
have to stay.
Stick around.
Watch and listen.
We've got another guy to talk about here, but DeAndre Ayton is the guy that we're going to get into now. This is feeling like, and again, I wouldn't have, before game seven, that the Phoenix Suns had their unceremonious exit from the playoffs, I would have said DeAndre Ayton is back to the Suns. That's what's going to happen. Now it feels like it's all but certain that he's leaving. I mean, I don't see it. We keep hearing more and more that the Suns probably don't want to pay Ayton a max salary. Mm-hmm. Other teams are willing to do it. That suggests that he's on the way out. Perhaps we see a sign and trade here. There are some landing spots. The aforementioned San Antonio Spurs. You've got the Detroit Pistons potentially being a landing spot for him as well. Where do you see this going with Ayton? Do you think the Suns are ready to just wash their hands of the situation and say, see you later?
Yeah, I kind of do. I think it's one of those things where the Suns are basically in a position where it's like, we're out on this. This is just this has now gone too far sideways, bringing them back, trying to rehab all that stuff. Maybe it's better to just move along, not tie up the long-term money, reset with a couple, you know, different players. Cause you're probably going to get a player or two back and switch that up. And I think it'll go that way. But yeah, I do think that they're going to go in a different direction and move. So yeah, but I let's see, you know, I think it's, you know, more likely than not that DeAndre Ayton's playing somewhere else. And if he is, I will say it is maybe 100% chance that he is, that it's via sign and trade. Cause I don't think the Suns will want to let him go just for nothing.
Did you see the comment from his agent, from Bill Duffy?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I mean, so just, I'll just read it cause I've got it right here in front of me. Talking to Basketball News, he said, "We're disappointed. We wanted a max contract." He's talking about last summer, the Suns didn't give him that contract. "He went out and was a soldier the whole year, played well, improved his statistics. So we're proud of him. A lot of guys handle things differently, but he was very mature about it. Things will work out for DeAndre. He's a valuable player. There's other teams in the league as well. He's a restricted free agent, so we'll see how this process unfolds." It's not often that you hear a player who's under contract and is slated to be a restricted free agent to say, well, you know, there's other teams, the agent of a player to say something like that. That suggests that there's probably a parting of ways coming here.
Yep. Hey, one of those other teams that's been mentioned, the Atlanta Hawks.
Yes.
They sound like they have been brought up quite a bit. I've heard a lot of people saying, could you do something around Ayton in a sign and trade for Clint Capella? Maybe it's Clint Capella and another player to balance out the salaries, and that's where you go. And that has interest to me if I'm the Phoenix Suns, because I think Capella comes in, you know, slightly cheaper, you know, in terms of salary goes, similar-ish production and role, I would guess. Probably a slightly worse offensive player because he just doesn't have the versatility, but probably a better defender and rebounder. That's probably close-ish. Well, we'll see. But on the Hawks, There's a lot of thought that the Hawks might be a team that makes big moves this offseason. I wrote about this over at SpotTrack. They've got a ton of wing players now with Bogdanovich, Hunter, Herder all signed. You have Gallinari, who's on a partially guaranteed contract. They re-signed John Collins last year. Trey Young's new max deal kicks in this offseason as well. So let's see where that comes together. But you've got a lot of stuff there with the Hawks that makes them a very, very interesting team as we go into this offseason just because of the potential. And I think there is a sense of we want to go back to being the team that was in the East Finals versus being this team that was just kind of barely slipped into the playoffs. And when you get into that spot, that's probably a group that says, all right, if we don't make this happen, we may not be the ones making these decisions much further down the line here.
Yeah, I mean, the expectations were there this season, and they didn't live up to those. They certainly fell short of what they did the previous season. And so there's plenty of motivation for the Hawks to make moves. And I think there's opportunity here because they've got wings. And that's what everybody in the NBA is constantly looking for, is wing players. So you've got pieces that are valuable. So that means I think there's going to be opportunities out there for them to make moves. They're going to have options on the table. The question is, can they pick the right ones in order to put this Hawks team back on track? We know they have to get better defensively. Can they do that without sacrificing too much of their offense? That's going to be kind of the balancing act for them. But, you know, a big move for a guy like DeAndre Ayton, I don't even know if, like, is Ayton enough of an upgrade over Clint Capella that you want to give up major stuff in order to do that, plus pay Ayton that max salary? I think there's certainly a debate you could have there. But the bottom line is that the Hawks are going to be one of those teams that's going to be in play for a DeAndre Ayton, for Jeremy Grant, for just about anybody that they want to get in the conversation with. I think that they can. They've got the pieces to at least be in the running for any of the big players that are going to be on the market.
Yeah, I completely agree. Would you say the Hawks have more wings than a B-dub threes?
Yes. That's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it.
Thanks. Proud of that one.
I like that one.
Did well there.
We do need to get to our...
Is that what you guys call them? Do you guys call them B-dub threes, or do you call it B-dubs?
No, I'll admit that took me a second to for it to click, and I went, oh, yeah, okay. But, B-dubs, I think I hear more frequently.
See, we here in the East Coast, we call it Buffalo Wild Wings and Whack, because that's what it was like initially called.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what Whack is?
No.
It's basically a roast beef sandwich on a certain type of roll. And it's like the roast beef is super rare and it's very thin cut. And then you serve it with a horseradish and au jus. And they were originally called Buffalo Wild Wings and Whack. And the first few on the East Coast, that's what they were named as. So, but whatever, that's a stupid aside. I don't know why they got focused on that, especially on a day where we have limited time.
That is true. That is true. But not that the aside was stupid. That's not true. But we do have limited time.
No, it was.
but that being said.
Yeah, let's do it. I know where you're going.
The new Thor trailer came out. We got to talk about this. Oh, my goodness. But I had to, as soon as it, like, I'm watching it on the TV as it's airing, as soon as it ended, I had to go online and watch it again, because I'm like, this looks absolutely fantastic. Christian Bale as Gore looks phenomenal. I was blown away when they started going into, like, black and white scenes. I went, okay, they're going to start to push the boundaries here with this one. Some of the, like, Thor's costume was taken almost straight out of the comics. I like the look there. I mean, I'm excited for this movie. It looks like it's going to be absolutely fantastic.
It very clearly has the humor of Thor Ragnarok, which is huge. I think that's, quite frankly, I think why we still have Chris Hemsworth playing Thor, because he likes playing the funny and different versions of Thor. Yeah, I'm beyond excited. I can't wait for this one. It's we got about a month and a half, a little over a month to go. So yeah, Obi-Wan starts at the end of the week. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for that on Disney Plus. For all the Star Wars folks out there, and then we got Ms. Marvel coming up, which Ms. Marvel's got a different rating. I guess, than some of the other Disney shows, which is also interesting too. So yeah,
what's the rating on it?
Disney Plus. I don't know. I didn't have a chance to read the article. I know it's one up from whatever they usually are. So yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. So. All right. Well, let's finally reveal our mystery player. We're talking. I'm assuming we're on the same wavelength here. Bradley Beal, and what he's doing with the Washington Wizards. Look, there's been teams for years now that have been kind of circling Bradley Beal, hoping that they could get him some way. But it's looking more and more likely that he will wind up re-signing with the Washington Wizards. He said many times that he wants to stay in Washington, wants to win there. But still, as the team has struggled, there's been ebbs and flows there. The rumors have persisted that, you know, maybe he could be available. Maybe somebody could convince him to leave. But it does seem like he is going to wind up sticking around in Washington.
Yeah, this is one of those where take the money in 2 years in if it's not working, much like Damian Lillard. If he asks for a trade, I don't think anyone's going to blame him. It'll be seen as like, hey, man, you gave us a decade. Like, we can't ask anything more. You know, time to go. If I was the Wizards, I'd maybe be a little cautious of how much I want to pay him. His game really slipped a lot this past year, so you have to feel pretty calm. And that's before the injury stuff. Uh-huh. So you have to feel pretty confident that he's going to bounce right back. Otherwise, you could be stuck in a spot where that's not such a great contract by the end. But I mean, they can't replace him if he leaves. He is very much their franchise guy. I don't see that there's any other choice they really can make here. I think you have to re-sign him.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if you just ultimately trade him a year from now or something, you can't just let him walk away. You've got to sign him and then give it a go. I mean, the Wizards look great at the beginning of the season. At one point, they were even the one seed in the Eastern Conference, but I'm not expecting that to be replicated. But still, I think this team, they can look at it and say, with a few tweaks here and there, can we be a solid playoff team and be in that mix? And if not, you still want to have Bradley Beal under contract because he'll be a value on that deal. And then you can move him unless, of course, the wheels completely fall off. But that's not what I'm expecting to happen.
Yeah, we'll talk more on when we talk Wizards offseason later. Mm-hmm. But there's just stuff they got to work out to rebalance that roster.
All right, let's jump to the Philadelphia 76ers. Not looking to trade Tyrese Maxey. No surprise. I thought there were specifically certain games in the playoffs where Maxey was better than James Harden was. Part of that is, you know, an indictment on James Harden and his play. But it's also that Maxey was really good. He's been fantastic for them. So he is close to untouchable. That makes it look in the NBA. There's no truly untradeable player, but still they're not going to be calling anybody up saying, hey, what can we get for Tyrese Maxey? He's a player they would like to hang on to, and rightfully so. Interesting, though, the word is that they will listen to offers on Matisse Thybulle. What do you think about, I mean, one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA, kind of value do you get there? And should that be the piece that the Sixers look to move as they hope to improve the team?
Yeah, I think the challenge is he is, right, we have 3-and-D players. Mm-hmm. He is transitioning very closely to being a, you know, nothing and D player.
Yeah.
And how much, if it is not a center, can you pay a complete non-offensive factor?
Right.
He shot 31% from three this year. And his volume is 2.2 per game, so it's not super high. Mm-hmm. But it's also like he just doesn't, it's not like he's not taking any. And that's disappointing because as a rookie, he was at 35%, but last year 30%, this year 31%. You had the fact that the team very clearly felt let down by his decision to not get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Or not get fully vaccinated. He had one shot. So that seems like a, you know, will factor in here as well. So that's the challenge because he's extension eligible. So you have to start looking at it is, and how much are we going to pay a guy that is just cannot, he's nowhere close to anything on offense. Like he is basically completely disregardable because no one really cares. He doesn't get to the free throw line. He doesn't cut. Can't score off the dribble. It's basically, you know, layups and jump shots. That's it. Like he can't do anything else. So that's a huge challenge, despite the fact that he may be the best perimeter defender in the league.
When you've got a team that's got Joel Embiid, who obviously can shoot outside but does a lot of damage in the paint, James Harden, who does a lot of his damage driving into the paint, again, can shoot outside, yep. but a big part of his game is driving to the basket, and Tyrese Maxey, too. Having a guy on the floor that the other team doesn't have to defend, and they just stick an extra defender in the paint, that's a problem. That's a big problem. And so I can understand from the offensive end of the floor, it really does come down to if you can just get up to league average, teams will care if you're out there behind the arc. If you can't, teams won't. And that's the problem. And you see that it's not just Maxey dealing with that, but I'm sorry, it's not just Thybulle dealing with that, but I don't know what his value is going to be with that. Yeah. With that being a factor,
it has to be league average and willing to shoot.
Sure.
Too. Yep. Because if you're just, who cares if you don't ever make them? That was kind of the issue with TJ McConnell during his Philadelphia years. He was a non-shooter, so you could never play him and Simmons together because there's a major difference between a bad shooter and a non-shooter. Yep. A bad shooter occasionally gets hot, and you do have to guard them. That's kind of the way it's been with Marcus Smart for a lot of his career. When you're a complete non-shooter, the defense can just disregard you fully.
Yep. Yep. All right, let's move on to the Bulls and the Pistons, who are going to be traveling overseas.
Yeah.
Be playing in Paris. Interesting. So so they're going to be heading over there and playing a game. I'd imagine that's going to be, and I haven't looked at the time or anything for this game, but because we don't have the full schedule or any of that. But I'd imagine this is going to be one of those, like, it's going to be a random, like, 1 o'clock game here or something like that.
Yeah, I think
that,
they were either like 2 or 3 o'clock when the NBA did them. Mm-hmm. They did them for several years in a row. I want to say from like 2017 to 2020 or something, whether it was in London or Paris. They were like 2 or 3 in the afternoon Eastern time. We're right at that kind of prime time window over in Europe for them. And yeah, the last one were the Hornets and the Bucks all the way back in the end of January 2020. They went over there and played, and then shortly thereafter, about a month later, the whole world shut down.
So
back on the table, we've got the preseason games in Abu Dhabi. They're talking about games back in Japan again, and maybe China again, and all sorts of stuff. So we get all kinds of international ball coming our way. But this one, regular season game, to be clear.
Yeah.
This is not a preseason.
All right. Before we get into the draft stuff, we can finish with that. We can mention this. Jovan Buha of The Athletic put out a story today on Russell Westbrook. I went in depth into this over on the Lakers Nation YouTube channel already. But Russell Westbrook, according to Jovan, essentially every team that has discussed Russ trades with the Lakers is demanding a first-round pick, which is not a surprise at all if they're going to take Russ. But what is surprising is the Lakers, up to this point, have said no, that they will not include a first-round pick in any Russell Westbrook trade. Obviously, that means they're at an impasse because teams say we must get a first, and the Lakers say we must not trade a first. Really hard to get a deal done in that scenario. So we're also seeing rumors persist that the Lakers, at least some voices within their front office, believe that a new coach and new pieces around LeBron, AD, and Russell Westbrook can get different results, can improve things, can smooth things out. A lot of people are skeptical of that, myself included, but that's where we're at right now. Keith, let me get your take on this, because I've already talked about this a ton. What do you think about that situation? Do you think ultimately the Lakers just bite the bullet and give up a first, or do you think they're really serious about potentially bringing him back and thinking that it could actually work with different pieces involved?
Yeah, I think the Lakers are being very cagey and cautious right now, which is what they should do, which is, there's no reason to say, hey, we just got to go. We'll give up picks today.
Sure.
Nothing's going to happen yet. So just kind of keep, continue to say no and hang tight and hang tight and hang tight. And then eventually you can sort through that, when it comes time down the line. So I do think we will see him moved on. I can't see how you bring him back. It just doesn't make sense to me. And let's see, because a lot of that depends on what's coming back the other way.
Sure.
And my feeling on it would be hard. As long as you can break him up in a smaller contracts, it's hard to get into a position where you're taking back anything worse. So, maybe it does take one of the first round picks to get off it. I don't know that I'd give that up. I might be more willing to just say, well, we'll just wait it out. And then if he's really that unhappy, hey, give back a whole bunch of money in a buyout. We're happy to set you free. Yeah. You know, we can go that way. So I tend to think this one could potentially get a little bit ugly, but well, yeah, let's see. We've got a month.
The reports have also been that the Lakers will not entertain buying him out or waiving him or anything like that. But of course, again, like you said, that kind of has to be their stance right now, because if there's any thought, if there's any whiff of the Lakers could buy him out, that being a real thing, then nobody's going to trade for him. Exactly. Right. So that's the kind of what their stance has to be. And then on top of that, I've been talking a lot about this. Russell Westbrook has not picked up his player option yet. Now, I'm not saying he's not going to, but I'm saying that the Lakers legally can't trade him right now because he has not picked up that player option. So Russell Westbrook is going to maintain that control as long as he possibly can. So if there's a trade, if a team calls up Rob Pelinka right now and says, hey, we want to give you this stuff for Russell Westbrook, and the Lakers say, yes, we want to do that, if that's not a team Russ wants to go to, he can shut that down all the way up until the deadline for signing that that player option.
Which is exactly why anybody thinking he'll get traded at the draft, unless he's super excited about where it is and it comes with he opts in pre-draft and then they get it done, maybe. I'm not going to take it off the table. Stranger things have happened. But it's more likely he continues to hold the control, waits, exercises it at the last minute, or at least after the draft. And then that's, you know, where things go from there.
Yep. All right. Speaking of the draft, Jabari Smith and Chet Holmgren, Jonathan Givony and Mike Schmitz believe they will be the one and the two, respectively. Do you agree with that, that those two guys should go 1-2?
So this is funny. Every time I look at these top three guys, Jabari Smith, Chet Holmgren, and Paolo Banchero, who for me have very much separated themselves as the best three players in this draft class, whenever I'm watching them, whoever I'm watching at the time, I think is going to be the best player of the three. Like I'm super excited about all three guys. I do think Banchero's probably third on that list. I don't know that the Magic have fully decided yet. I don't think that's the way they really do things and run. I think they will continue to do their work on these players and try to figure that out and take this, you know, they may take it all the way right up to the, you know, time limit in the first round pick. So we'll see. But if I had to guess today, Smith and Holmgren, I think, is the order I would go. But check with me, you know, a little later this afternoon. Shoot me a text, and I might give you a little bit of a different answer. The other thing out of the draft combine that we wanted to touch on real quick, Dyson Daniels, who played for the G League Ignite, really starting to climb up draft boards. People really were excited about what they saw. Big guard, ball handling skills, can do a lot of different things. So, you know, he's a player to keep an eye on for sure as he comes up. We've got a little under a month now, one day short of a month to go until the draft. So we're going to continue to hear a lot of, you know, this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy. So we'll see.
And this can matter. I mean, last year it was Bones Highland who was doing things in the combine that rose him up. So this can certainly be a thing. And so it'll be interesting to see where Dyson Daniels go. I mean, like Corey Kispert moved way up the draft boards last year as we got within like the last week before the draft. So there is still plenty of time for movement. And I'll finish with this. The thought that pops into my head every time you say there's a top three that have distanced themselves from everybody else, I think, of course there is, because the Sacramento Kings have the fourth overall pick.
I know, right? It for years, too, that's how it felt with the Magic. Wherever the Magic picked, whether it was fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, it was a top whatever one short of wherever they were draft. And in most of those years, too, they slid back a pick or two. So, yeah, it's definitely tricky. And I want to point people to one thing real quick as we're wrapping up here. I retweeted it. It's by Ken Rodriguez for the San Antonio Report .org. He wrote a really cool story about Greg Popovich and where he is. It's funny. I'll just read his tweet. For nearly 2 months, I dug into the private life of Greg Popovich. I pried and poked in places he does not like and found this. Maybe the most generous coach in NBA history. From four-figure tips to seven-figure gifts, no one gives like Pop. And it's all about the things he does for the community and the charity and tips and how he takes care of staffers and all that. Well worth your time to read. It's again, Ken Rodriguez at KRodWriter. On Twitter. It's also, you can find it on my timeline at Keith Smith NBA. I quote tweeted it and it's out there. It is really, you know, unbelievable. It's so great. I would really take time to read this, and you will feel a lot better, after you read it.
First of all, that sounds like a fantastic story. I definitely need to go and read that one. So I'm definitely going to go check that out. But second of all, wait, so clarify this. You quote tweeted this? You mean you didn't just copy and paste the tweet and then tag the person at the bottom of it? Like that's mind-blowing stuff, Keith.
Yeah, I might have got a little in my feelings the other day about that one. That stuff's maddening. I have to go do school pickup on the next to last day of school here, so I will save that rant for another day.
That's our cliffhanger.
Trevor will get me going, and I will I'll get going on that at some point there too. So
we'll talk about that one maybe tomorrow or maybe tonight on our live stream on Playback. So come join us. Use the link in the description below. But thank you everybody for joining us. Make sure you do subscribe right here to the NBA Front Office YouTube channel. Don't forget to turn on those notifications as well. Till next time, everybody. See ya and stay safe.